Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
On the PR Moment podcast this week, I'm talking to Matt Wilcox and Mark Perkins of Cal PR about being a creative director in public relations. 10 years ago, there weren't too many creative directors working in PR, but now there are quite a few. On this podcast, we're going to look at the role of the creative director in public relations and compare them to their advertising peers, who tend to work in pairs, whereas in PR, creative directors tend to work on their own. And thanks so much to our PR Moment podcast sponsors, the PRCA. Matt and Mark, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So, you're two creative directors now working at Cal, but you don't actually describe yourselves as creative partners. Is that correct?
No, it's not correct in the sense that we very much are creative partners. We don't sort of have a website, a Mark and Matt website, or a shared portfolio, and we sort of don't sort of present ourselves as kind of one entity, but we are very much in a creative partnership and we work as a pair. I think that was very much the sort of intention sort of behind this, and it's how we're working.
Okay, so so when you're working, you're not working in silos. You get a brief and you bounce it off each other, and in that sort of as a process, if you like.
Yeah, so I think it's a bit of both. Sometimes we will work very much in tandem. We'll work together on something. At the moment, that's all been done entirely virtually. But then at other times, we may go away, think about something individually, come back and share each other's thinking, and then collectively arrive at an idea that, or ideas that may have been better thought of collectively than they would have done if we were working entirely in silo. So it is it's a mix. It's not entirely the case that we are, you know, every single day, all the time working together, but neither are we ever working in isolation.
So, Mark, when when a brief comes in, what sort of percentage of those briefs are you working with Matt on, and what sort of percentage do you go and just work on your own, or does it depend on the brief? How do you decide whether to work together or alone, and you know, how does that all look?
It depends on what the pipeline of work is. So we've got quite a bit on at the moment. It's not effective for us to spend all our time together working on the same brief. But what is really effective is we both get a chance to digest a brief. We might discuss it, exchange some thoughts, some observations, think about what the challenge is, and maybe, you know, what's our point of view going to be on this brief, on how we respond to it, what we got to work with. And then we'll go off and we'll have a think and a ruminate. We might work on something else in the meantime as well. And then we'll come back with some more thoughts. And from that, you start to build something together. So it is great if someone comes back with, I've got an idea. But usually it's like, I've got these thoughts and there's something I've seen and this is interesting. And what do you think of this? And you just share opinions and insights. And very quickly, things start to form. So that's the most effective way. And then we might start forming ideas, but then we'll go off again and then come back to it.
And is that a process that happens between the two of you? And I don't want to make this too much about you. It's just interesting to take you two as an example, if you know what I mean. But how much of that sort of that input and that comparing of notes are you having between the two of you, and how much of it is within the wider agency?
I would say more often than not, it's happening with the wider teams. You know, Mark and I may share very early thinking between ourselves, or between ourselves and maybe a director on one of the teams. But as I said, invariably, we are going away, coming back together, and then we're all discussing it in a wider forum and taking everybody's ideas and builds and inputs, and actually sort of as a collective coming up with the final ideas that go into the decks and are presented to the clients.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you two used to work together, didn't you? Sort of, when was it? Sort of 11 years back or something like that. And then
Matt, you stayed at Cal, and Mark, you've gone off and been around a few agencies and now come back. Why did you decide to work together again? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, after I left, I was doing my own thing. I kept seeing campaigns that were really interesting, intriguing, and original, and they were always coming out of Cal, almost always coming out of Cal. So I'd been away from Cal for 8 years, and I thought Matt and the team at Cal were doing some of the most interesting original work, and I just got a hankering to. I really like the agency. I really like the culture. I like Matt. A lot of the other people that I worked with 8 years ago are still there. And so I spoke to Sean, the founder, and also to Matt. It was about, shall we get the band back together? And I think we're both probably, definitely very different people than we were 10, 12 years ago. You wouldn't have wanted to go on a night out with us in 2010. So, and I think strangely enough, Matt having the opportunity to work as a creative at Cal really blossomed and gave him the chance to create his own kind of sense of work and identity, and I did the same. And now it's a case of we're both coming together and working together, and it's the power of two rather than one to create better, more original work, quicker and faster and more efficiently.
And you don't think there's a danger you're going to get in each other's way?
Well, not geographically, certainly with the lockdown. That's impossible. In fact, we've only spent 2 days in the office together. But no, I mean...
But you know what I mean? There can only be... I don't... That sounds a bit Star Wars-y. There can only be one idea at the end of a campaign, can't there? So is there a competitive element to it? I mean, maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
We talked about this and... In some sense, there is a competitive element in that we both want to get the best idea, but we don't actually care where it comes from, because we're a business and we have to create ideas that are going to make a difference for our clients. And there's no point trying to justify an idea just because it's yours. We've got to develop strategies and ideas that are going to best serve our clients and our agency and our teams. So if it comes from Matt, myself, or the cleaner, it does not matter, as long as it comes from within the agency. And it's our job to work with those on the team, see if they can come up with ideas or identify, you know, if they can come up with the beginning of an idea, and we can work together to make good great.
So you don't even have a little internal scorecard between yourselves as to who's come up with the most ideas?
No, and I think it would be, you know, we see it as it would be kind of counterproductive if we were kind of pitting ourselves off against one another. Okay. Like Mark said, we're both past sort of caring about who came up with what idea or anything like that, or having ownership of an idea. It's all about just arriving at the best set of ideas. Yeah. And, ego aside completely and working as a pair, we feel just comes up with, we're able to come up with better ideas than we may have done on our own.
I just want to just explore a little bit where you just talk about where ideas come from with an agency. And it's always a tricky one, isn't it? So that balance of people like you, creative directors like you, being that focus of idea generation within a firm versus making sure that you use and communicate and use the talent that you've got within the business, which is one of the nice unique things about public relations firms, isn't it? You've got lots of people within the business who understand the sectors that they're in and look and read the media, and therefore undoubtedly will come up with ideas. How do you get that balance right to make sure that you and I suppose what processes do you go through to make sure that you're talking to people within the business and utilising their ideas as well as your own?
Well, you're absolutely right. In PR, the creative director or people who have creative in their title have to wear multiple hats, and only one of those hats is come up with ideas. The other sides of the job, which are just as important, is developing other people and enabling them to come up with good insights and good ideas, and then spreading that throughout the agency. And part of the reason behind why we formed this kind of creative partnership is that we feel it actually allows us more time to develop other people than if there was only, say, one creative director who was having to do all of those tasks at the same time. So, you know, far from this model creating a kind of closed shop of creativity, you know, it's our opinion, and it's certainly our ambition, that it allows us to spend a lot more time investing in other people and bringing them through and helping them, so that you do end up with a sort of a more democratic approach to ideas in an agency.
And how does that work then? How do you do that? Because that's it's an easier thing to say than do, isn't it? Especially when it's all virtual, but hopefully that will change soon.
It is challenging, and I don't know that any one has kind of cracked it completely, but you should certainly do your utmost. I think it's always a case of creating an environment, even virtually, where those who want to be creative and feel they can be creative are afforded the opportunity to do so, that they're given the guidance and mentorship from people like Mark and myself to actually learn the techniques, to be able to become kind of students of ideas, and then to be able to apply themselves in a kind of non-intimidating environment. And, you know, we try to sort of create the most casual environments we can where people can come up with other ideas. Now, it does take time, but like we said, the fact that there's now two of us operating as creative directors means we're able to just put more time into more people.
There's loads there I want to ask you about. Is the first one is pressure. That's an interesting, the idea of coming up with ideas under pressure is always, there's always been a tension at the heart of that, I've felt. Is that something you need to try and avoid when you're coming up with ideas? You know, that do you come up with the best ideas under when you're under a deadline, or do you need to, you know, go for a walk with a dog and relax?
Yes and no. Probably the best ideas do come out of pressure, because if you didn't have pressure, you're not going to be so focused. As creative directors, we don't want to put pressure on our team members and colleagues to come up with ideas, because that's not going to be productive. But it does, I can't speak for Matt, but for me, certainly the best ideas have come when I've just been able to take a step back, have a clear head. But there's an element of pressure. You've got a deadline, you've got expectations. And I think the other thing about creativity is, and this is something that we try and get across, is that it's not just anyone can come up with an idea, but the flip side of creativity is critical thought and asking yourself, why is this a good idea? Who will give a shit? Why will it matter? And when we work with ourselves, these are the questions you have quite hard on yourself and stress test ideas before you get to the stage of maybe even sharing them with a team, let alone a client. You want to be sure that they're foolproof. And a good way of working together is if we might just have the beginning or middle or an end of an idea, but I can share it with Matt and we can share it with team colleagues, and people can add to it or take parts away from it. Sometimes better ideas are when they're stripped back rather than multi-layered. So it's just working out what's going to be the most effective way of getting the result that you want.
Matt, you were just talking there, I was trying to break that down into, you know, what a successful environment to bring ideas to the fore, really. I guess so that you sort of talked about culture being one. It's giving people an incentive to come up with ideas. I don't know, particularly meaning financial there, but is that, do you do that at all? Does that, or is it more about just is it not quite about that?
We're not a pushy agency in that way. It's very much about, if people recognise that they want to do this kind of work, that we do everything we can to help them along the way. You know, I was given the opportunity by Sean, founder of Cow, 8 years ago, to specialise in creativity when Mark left for the first time. And that was an amazing opportunity afforded to me. And we've tried to sort of ensure that those opportunities are always afforded to people and then they're helped. But we're not a kind of a, like, we're not a pushy kind of agency. Right.
It's about culture and mentorship was something else you mentioned. But how does that, I mean, do you guys, and then you talk about another phrase you used, there was students of ideas. How does that manifest itself? What do you do to encourage that amongst the team?
Well, I mean, Mark and I were discussing this a short while ago. I certainly kind of learned on the job. I was never kind of given any formal training. And that's not a bad thing at all. It's certainly worked very well for me. But it does, I suppose, become more challenging to actually pass that knowledge on to other people if you have kind of just learned on the job and the processes you go through aren't necessarily kind of conscious thought processes. But there is, I think, a lot of value in taking the time to actually make those unconscious processes more conscious, or at least be able to articulate them to other people. And the one thing that I did a lot of when I was at an earlier stage in my career was just, like I said, being a student of other people's ideas, just like devouring as many ideas as I could find, and then trying to sort of put them all down on a table and see if I could categorize them and say, oh, well, this idea is this kind of idea and that idea is that kind of idea. And can I get to a point where I can fit most ideas into a handful of categories? And if you're able to do that, you're then able to start being able to understand what's actually behind those ideas and be able to pass that knowledge on to other people. Because I think it is just much more valuable to be able to help people understand what's going on behind ideas and letting them learn on the job at the same time, rather than it being sort of totally sort of learn the ropes while you go.
I
was just going to say that I always try, and this is for myself as well, but get other people to do it as well, is have a feel of what great looks like. So if you've got a brief and it's some key messages from a client, new product coming out, but it's no different from any other product on the market, and there's a few little consumer stats, that's not going to inspire you. So always just study other people's work, whether it's in PR, advertising, design, but also culture, and try and understand when someone talks about a great piece of work, don't just take it at face value. Try and understand and take it apart. Why? What made it great? Where did that idea come from? And how did it manifest itself in such a way that it really captured the imagination and inspired people and made an impact in the way that other ideas that just may be good or average didn't? And just so it's about looking at the inspiration, the processes, and seeing taking some of those techniques and approaches to sometimes quite a dull brief. There's never such a thing as a dull brief. You just accept it's dull. How do you make a dull brief interesting and exciting? And that's kind of relaying to the people you have to speak to, and how do you bring it to life in different media channels in a way that's going to capture the attention, the imagination, and make people go, wow, that's different. So you can only do that by looking at other people's work and getting an understanding of that and applying it to your own work.
And when you say layers within an idea, do you mean that there's not sort of set layers, are there? There's just different elements to appreciate within an idea. Is that what you mean? There's different within an idea. There's different layers of insight. Is that what you mean, or do you just mean that there's different activation parts of the same idea?
A bit of both. Every great idea starts with a human truth or an insight, that thing that makes make people go, fuck yeah, that's true. But it's how you bring it to life, which is the different layers of, so you reach people in so many different ways, whether it's how they kind of see that idea for the first time when they're scrolling down with a thumb on their phone, what's going to make their thumb stop and capture their attention. How might I say it in a physical space? What would a video look like? What an image look like? What's the legacy of it? You know, how far can we take this idea so that it could be activated in different ways to capture people's attention at different times?
Fine. Matt, just quickly, you said something a minute ago. I just wanted to go back to different categories of ideas. What did you mean by that? To explore that a bit more.
What I meant by that was I find it a useful way to sort of help people learn about ideas and sort of how to come up with ideas. I mean, hopefully they find it useful as well. But I think if you were being sort of completely kind of trying to simplify everything, you could probably say that all ideas are about just sort of making connections between unrelated things, but you wouldn't be able to box every single idea into that sort of category of, oh, this is an idea showing unrelated things coming together. I think when you look at the huge number of ideas that are done, whether it's in PR or advertising or any other kind of channel, and you put them all down, let's say you print them all out and put them on a table, you can see kind of commonalities in the kind of DNA of the ideas. And as much as you can try to sort of put ideas with similar DNA together, and you say, okay, well, what is that kind of technique that's on show in that idea?
So just give us a category might be what?
Well, for example, I'm not wanting to sort of inflate any sense of ego on Mark's side, because obviously we're completely avoiding that. If you took Missing Type, for example, which is one of Mark's campaigns, that wasn't, I'm not talking about the manner in which the idea was arrived at, but if you were looking at the idea, it was about making the familiar unfamiliar. So it was taking the familiar environment and making it unfamiliar. And you can categorize dozens of ideas under that kind of approach, you know, whether it was Cadbury's milk chocolate taking the words and the letters off its packaging as part of a partnership with Age UK. There are many, many ideas which fit that kind of mold. And then there's a handful of other kind of molds which ideas fit into as well. So I find it quite useful when I am doing creative workshops with people to say, okay, today we're going to study this kind of idea, and tomorrow we're going to study this kind of idea. And not all ideas will fit neatly into these categories, but it's worthwhile trying to show that some do, because it becomes a useful tool to use when you're in a brainstorm, for example. If you find yourself stuck staring at a blank piece of paper, these are useful kind of rules of thumb or tools to fall back on, which can lead to ideas very quickly, actually. And it's something that we might take for granted, but people who are emerging into the discipline, it can actually be really kind of eye-opening to go, well, I didn't know that those seven ideas, which on the surface may look very different, actually share the same kind of DNA.
Right.
It's true. Sometimes it's just a case of a little tweak. So if you just take something away or add something, you create something new. So for the last World Cup, they wanted a World Cup idea. And rather than take something away from the logo, I just added three lion emojis, and suddenly their brand became three lions. It was that simple, but it was using the same technique. What can I add or take away to create a disruptive impact? And it's quite simple, but it's just as long as you understand there's lots of little techniques that you can do to do that.
So I mean, it's interesting, you clearly, so the sort of stuff you're talking about there, that's how you facilitate the creative process, is it, within your peers within Cal currently, that you're trying to give people the tools to think about things more creatively, in a sense, to come up with those ideas, is it? So is that kind of what that process within Cal looks like, that you're trying to give people the tools to come up with these sorts of ideas?
Definitely, but it's not the only approach, because I think there's this tendency, or maybe there's this cult of the idea within the industry, that it's all about the idea and let's jump straight to the idea. Those techniques that Mark and I just talked about, are you useful when you're trying to come up with the ideas, but there's a heck of a lot of work that needs to happen before you arrive at that stage. And it goes back to what Mark was talking about earlier about human truths and finding the insights and developing a platform which dictates whether an idea is right for a brand or wrong for a brand. So if you were to sort of go back to sort of parallels within an ad agency, that would be the job of the planner, right? And then the idea generation would be the job of the creative pairs under the supervision of the creative director. We and all agencies, I imagine, that do creativity and PR have to kind of roll all of those responsibilities into one So people who want to be creative are having to be a planner and be a creative at the same time. But it's really important to do that work before you get to thinking about, okay, am I going to do an idea where I take something away? Or am I going to do an idea where I combine two things that don't belong together to arrive at a new idea?
But there are more and more planners within PR, aren't there? So I just wonder whether, do you see that evolving a little bit? Or is that, do you find it useful to have that planning element within your role?
Our role is redundant without it. If you don't think like a planner at the beginning, you've got very little to work with of substance when you're trying to come up with ideas. So you have to take that step back and think, what assets do I have to work with?
But as part of the creative process, do you think you come up with better ideas because you've done that work, or can you outsource it to somebody else, so a PR planner?
I think neither of us have had anyone to outsource it to, so we've had to do that work. And I think over the years we've actually got quite good at it, right. And I think that's reflected in the work that we do. So, and because there was no formal training in PR in our day, when we were learning the ropes, we kind of learnt by our mistakes, and we intuitively, but also from experience, learned to form campaigns. That was the starting point. Rather than just let's have an idea and let's put something big on Potter's Field or float it down the Thames, you understand reasons why that doesn't work, because it doesn't touch people or connect people or reflect culture or what's going on in people's lives. So you have to find stuff that is actually going to matter to them and doesn't just look like marketing.
Well, so just talk me through those, because there's a beginning of a process there, isn't there, which is always interesting for people to hear about. You've got your insight and your planning is your first stage in your process. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I suppose the main difference between us and advertising is, as Mark said before, it's not as structured and formalized. It may all kind of blend into kind of one murky kind of thing where you're thinking of insights and you're also thinking of ideas simultaneously, or you know in some instances you may have an idea and you've got to find an insight. It's not necessarily the right way to do things, but that's just sometimes what happens. So if you were to say, okay, break it all down, yes, that would be the process, and that should be the process, but it's not quite as structured and start and middle and end as it would be in a much bigger agency within PR or within advertising.
We don't kind of have a process sheet that we work our way through when we get a brief. It's just talking, and maybe I've just found this in sharing an article or something like this, or a piece of data, and like, this is interesting. So it's just, and we just talk and make connections to build things up.
Right. So how often are you stuck with an idea then?
Every day.
Yeah, every minute. There's always an idea that needs cracking that you haven't quite cracked yet.
Yeah. And how do you know when you've cracked it? Because quite often you come up with an okay idea, but who knows whether there might be something else around the corner, if you like.
It's a good question, because sometimes I've put ideas in a deck, and there's been an idea that I thought, this is the really great idea. And there's been another idea in there that I thought was, that's okay. And what happens is the idea you think's great maybe turns out to be a bit of a dud, and the idea you thought was okay turns out to win awards. So it can be hard to judge. Like, we're not, we may sort of be experienced, but, you're always learning about what works and what doesn't work. And especially within PR and earned media, where results aren't guaranteed. So you can't sort of say this is absolute dead certs win. You have a kind of a gut feeling built over time about what works and what doesn't work, and it goes all the way back to our earlier conversation about studying other ideas and what's worked there, and does this kind of share the kind of the DNA of those ideas? Does it have that kind of this looks great, or this has got sort of great written on it? But you're only going to know until you actually sort of do that idea and release it, and it either flies or it might not fly. So it's always a learning process.
How often do clients surprise you, Mark? Do they buy the idea that you like or that you think is going to fly, and or sometimes do you think they never do that because it's too scary? Or
You know, it's part of the process. The best ideas come from the best briefs. If you've got a brief to amplify a strapline or a CGI character that's in an ad, you really do have a problem, because that's a bad starting point. And there are far more interesting things possibly around that brand, product or service to work with. And so part of the job of a creative is to go back to the client and say, actually, we think there's a more interesting opportunity here or a problem where you can have a role to help solve and become a brand hero rather than trying to just talk about the strapline or make this character famous. So you, part of a creative's job is not just to respond to a brief with the best idea. It's to be useful to the client, to add value, to help make a difference to their business. And we've always believed that a simple idea can help to help solve business or social problems. So it's that's where we can help to make a difference, is to sometimes go back to the client with something they hadn't even seen before. And that comes again from that, maybe that planning role. So here's something we think, and here's how we can bring it to people's attention in a way that's really going to make a lasting impression. And here's what they'll think of you and your brand as a result. So we're not just coming up with ideas. We are, part of our job to make sure those ideas come to fruition is we have to sell them and take the client on that terrible word journey. So they really buy into it and don't want to make too many changes as well, and don't want to possibly add too many layers or take too many layers away. Just so we have something we think is just going to be just so it works.
You must have had it times when you absolutely loved an idea and the client didn't want to do it. Does that happen often?
Yeah, it does. But I think you've got to learn not to sort of get too hung up on what ideas do or don't get done. You know, there may always be another client who wants that idea in the future, and it can go into the kind of big archive of unused ideas.
It must be frustrating, though. You must. I mean, it's part of the game, right? But it must be frustrating.
It is, but you, like you said before, you know, we're a business, our clients are a business, and they're going to want to do the idea that they feel is best for their brand. So that always is, I guess, the most important factor, and that's more important than whether you personally love an idea. So you've got to sort of, I think, sort of put that priority first. And just, you know, it's not about saying, well, I really love this idea and they've gone with another idea. It's about making sure that as many ideas as possible that you're giving them, that you're confident are going to work. So even if they've gone for the one that wasn't your personal favourite, it's still going to meet the brief and it's going to give them what they need.
We want to work that we're proud of, but also they're going to be proud of as well.
Just talk about the idea of how long it takes to time-wise to come up with an idea. Because, you know, the best ideas don't always take a long time to come up with, do they? But, I mean, is there... Did you have a sort of, I guess you don't have a limit to how long you spend on something. Presumably, good ideas can either take a long time or a short time to come up with, right?
Yeah, the football manager, Brian Clough, had a saying that it takes a second to score a goal, and it takes a second to have a good idea. You just don't know when that second is going to drop. So the campaign which won PR Moments Best Creative of 2020 was something I worked on, Pizza for Bees for Papa John's. And this is not a brag, it's just, it took 3 minutes from getting the brief to have that idea. And just to talk you through the process, one of the team, Papa John's, said they're bringing a new pizza out, there's £5,000, it's limited edition for a short time only. It's gonna be really hot. It's got lots of chili on there, but it's tempering the heat of the chili with some honey, and it's called the bee sting. And the client thinks it's really interesting, you know, the fact that it's really hot. Now, so that would have been an interesting stir. And I think the obvious thing, and this is the thought process I went through. Okay, the obvious thing to go down is heat and people's mouths burning, world's hottest pizza, we can make an even hotter one. But having studied campaigns and seeing what everyone else has done, knowing that there's been so many campaigns around super hot pizzas and super hot curries that there's nothing interesting there, nothing new to do. But honey seemed an interesting asset to work with because honey is made by bees. People love bees. And so why don't Papa John's make a pizza for bees? And so it just became a very simple, okay, well, what do bees pollinate with? So we put those flowers on the pizza. There's a guy I'd seen on the internet who makes mini food, so he can make them. But not only do people love bees, bees are in danger. So it could be cause related. So let's get a charity on board as well. And so people could not only order the pizzas, but they could get wildflower seeds to to help plant flowers, to help bees pollinate and survive. So put a bit of purpose in this idea as well, which was just a kind of a novelty photo. But that took about 3 minutes to form that idea. And I wish it was always that easy. But it was just making a series of connections very quickly and having the ability just to shut everything out for a few minutes and think, okay, honey is interesting. Don't go with the heat, go with the honey, go with the bees, and we can make something really cool. And it was also remembering as well, I'd seen a McDonald's campaign from Sweden where they'd made a McDonald's restaurant from a beehive. So possibly my first thought was, oh, doing a pizzeria for bees, and then, oh no, McDonald's have done that. Well, what else can we make? Well, Papa John's make pizza. So you're actually having this internal monologue. And it took about 3 minutes of that internal monologue to reach a solution where I had a complete campaign with a purpose, with a charity partner, with a visual that told the story of Papa John's and pizza. It's not always, never normally that quick. And there are still briefs that I've never cracked. So it can take a second and it can take forever. But it's just being able to equip yourself with the right insights and information, and you might get there.
Which makes charging for it quite difficult, doesn't it? Because, I mean, clearly you ain't going to charge them for 3 minutes, are you? So it's always a difficult one, that, isn't it? And you see that in all campaigns, don't you? The other week there was the Weetabix campaign with baked beans, wasn't it? Which clearly, you know, that... How do you charge for that campaign? It's a really difficult one to put a number on, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's a saying about lawyers that, you know, people complain you have to pay £500 or £1,000 for a lawyer, but you're not just paying for the hour, you're paying for the 20 years that they've put into to be able to provide that service within an hour. So I think the best thing about Matt and I working together is that combined experience to reach... What we do, our job is essentially problem solving, and we have to come up with ideas and solutions that are going to help solve client problems. And our ability to be able to focus on that and come up with responses and solutions quickly, efficiently, and on budget is part of the skill.
So, if you are an account director who is creative, how do you make that jump to being a creative director? Then What is there a sort of body of, you know, some good reading points that you would suggest, Mark, or how do you go about making that jump?
I think Matt and I both transitioned from account directors to creatives because our boss realised we were terrible at budgets, and we were probably useful parked away from numbers and running accounts day to day, and we were more useful coming up with ideas. So, I think. People who want to be creatives just have to keep putting themselves forward and putting ideas forward. Creative by its nature is people want to make things and make things happen. So I think there's always an innate desire there. And you kind of see it within agencies, the people who've got that enthusiasm, people asking, well, why don't we do this? Or what if, or why was it done like that? And shouldn't, and they're putting those thoughts forward. They're not necessarily fully formed campaign ideas, but they're already, it's a way of seeing things differently and having a personal point of view that you can make something different or by imagination or different inputs. So it's encouraging people to think freely, ask those questions and take it into a place that they find interesting. I think you said about rewarding people earlier for ideas. I think people who want to be creative directors or be creatives, the satisfaction comes from seeing an idea come to life rather than any kind of financial nest egg. There's obviously a nice, you get a financial benefit, but there's that pride in something that was in your head. You suddenly see it on a page or in its physical form. And that's where the satisfaction comes from. And from that satisfaction. You want to do it again. And I think that's what really drives you. It's bringing things to life.
Matt Wilcox and Mark Perkins, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really good to chat.
Thanks for having us, man.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.